The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's October the 25th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In Washington, D.C., they've been taking the Farm Bill up this week. We'll have an update of that. And then later in the program, we'll hear from Peter Levitt. He'll join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. In the wheat pit, December contract at 8.02, down 9. March contract 10 and a quarter lower at 8.21 and a quarter. In the May wheat at 7.80 and a half, down 8 and three quarters. July futures up 4 and three quarters at $6.62 and a half. December corn futures, 3.66 and a quarter, up 9 and three quarters. The March 9 and a half higher at 3.83. The May futures at 3.92 and a half. They finished 9 higher on the afternoon. In July at 4.02, up a dime. December contract in the corn pit for next year at 4.15 and one quarter, up 10 and three quarters. In next year's May 2009 at 4.27, 9.5 cents higher. December oats at 2.78 were up 3.5. November beans 9.94 and three quarters, up 18.5. January's at 10.12 and a half, up 18 and three quarters. And the March at 10.26 and three quarters, up 18 and three quarters. May contract 10.29, 17 higher. And the November 08 contract 13.5 cents higher at 9.67 and one half. December bean meal at 2.79.50, up 5.50. December bean oil at 40.92, up 42 for the afternoon, and rather up 44 for the afternoon. Mercantile exchange numbers nearby October live cattle at 95.40, up 27.5. December futures up 37.5 at 96.25. February October feeder cattle rather at 110.90, down 20, and noves 50 or 5 cents lower at 110.45. December lean hogs 54.60, 75 cents lower, and the Febs down 70 at 61.65. Outside markets now trading the nearby crude oil December contract $90.50 a barrel, gained $3.40 at this hour. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,635 is down just about 43 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Just this quick note, Ralph Esgar here on campus called me just a few moments ago to remind me that the variety trials are up on the website for Crop Sciences. If you'd like to see how corn and soybean hybrids manage to fare in the U of I variety trials, you can do that online. The address is vt.cropsci.uiuc.edu. Those of you in Illinois will know they're published in the newspaper. That'll happen on November the 2nd for the corn and November the 9th for the soybeans. Otherwise, you can get to those outside of the agri-news and online at vt.cropsci.uiuc.edu. Speaking of online, with us on the phone line now is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Wow, what a busy week. Maybe we ought to start and work our way through the wheat pit where we had two limit down days. But managed to stem that fall and a big up jump in corn and soybean prices today.
Yeah, wheat, of course, has been the big bear market this week. We've had some choppy price action. I mean, we had the limit up move there on Friday. Then we come in here and news over the weekend that Russia decided to leave their export tariff the same. and not do the raising. So then that all of a sudden tipped the scales into a long liquidation mode. And I think just plain money issues then continue to feed on itself as margin calls came out and people begin to liquidate. You know, we did tear up the chart somewhat. I'm not convinced that we've totally tore up the charts on wheat. A higher close, if we could regain probably what we lost here today and finish out the week on a positive note on Friday, I think then wheat would be in position kind of follow soybeans and corn higher next week.
Can I interrupt you just for a bit, Dan? Can you stay on the line?
Sure.
For just a bit. I need to interrupt the program for a moment because I told Senator Richard Durbin, the senior senator from the state of Illinois, that if he called in that we would talk to him a little bit about the farm bill and what's been happening in Washington, D.C. He has done that, and dutifully we'll go to Washington, D.C. to talk to Senator Durbin. Good afternoon to you, Senator. Thanks for making the phone call today. We appreciate it.
Sure. Glad to be with you.
Tell me, where are we at this point? I know there's been some extra work that was done on the farm bill, and I believe something's been approved. Is that correct?
Well, there's been change. I don't know if it's improved, but time will tell. But the Senate Agriculture Committee under Chairman Tom Harkin of Iowa unanimously reported out a farm bill this afternoon. That's good news that there would be a bipartisan agreement, but many of us understand there'll be plenty of amendments offered. Next week will not be the week for the farm bill on the Senate floor, but the following week should be. And that gives us a chance to finish the bill in the Senate, move it to conference, and finish it before the end of the year. There's still some tough issues out there. One of them has to do, for example, with the kind of payments that farmers would receive. I went to sat down with Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, and we tried to come up with a new approach. We worked with corn growers across the country, Illinois and Iowa corn growers in particular, to talk about a new system, a new approach that could save the government money and still provide basic protection to growers. Now, many corn growers have had a pretty good year or two, and they understand that the traditional reason for federal programs was a safety net in bad years. So we decided to take an honest look at a farmer's income, gathering information on both price and yield, and after crop insurance, providing a basic revenue or income protection for the farmers. It turned out that the program was offered on a voluntary basis in the farm bill, and then when they calculated the potential savings to the federal government, it was substantial. I remember when Senator Harkin of Iowa came to me and said, you know, this idea you have about revenue protection turns out to be a way to generate more federal funds, that is, reduce the cost of the program. Well, at the last minute, Senator Roberts of Kansas came in with a modification, which I understand was supported by the crop insurance industry. It is really made almost impossible to explain at this point. I can just say this. They have promised coming out of committee, we will be debating this during next week, and if necessary, consider amendments on the floor the following week.
So this is what's happened is that the average crop revenue program that you and Senator Brown from Ohio had put forward has been adapted and amended at least a couple of times in the process, and you're not quite sure how it works at this point.
Well, I know a few things. The Roberts Amendment significantly changed the revenue proposal by delinking it to crop insurance and making it less generous to producers and, frankly, not as attractive to Illinois farmers. So I go into this debate believing that my good friend Senator Roberts has taken a roller brush to a Rembrandt. We had a pretty good piece of legislation, and the crop insurance industry did not like it and made some changes in it. That isn't the end of the story. There's a chance for members of the Senate on the floor to make their own judgment.
Now, I understand that Senator Roberts took a look at it and said that in the worst 9 years in Kansas, this would have only paid your program or the program that had come out of the Ag Committee would have only paid out twice. He didn't think that that was enough. What is it that out of the program that was prior to the amendments that the crop insurance industry didn't like?
Well, first let me say to Senator Roberts and those who made that observation, it's a voluntary program. You don't have to sign up for it. You can stick with the traditional program if you like. And secondly, the crop insurance industry in America has been receiving rather generous support and subsidy from the federal government over the years. And they believe that if our program went forward, that their subsidy might be reduced. And so they are coming back with a proposal that they think will be more generous to their insurance industry. That's not my bottom line. I wish them well. We need them. But my bottom line is the producer, to make sure that they're protected in a bad year, and the taxpayer, to make certain that they're not making payments in great years for farmers.
And how long this will be taken up again, when do you think?
In a week. This coming week is filled, but the following week we should start with the Farm Bill.
Okay, so I suspect that what will happen here, at least on campus, is that Gary Schnitke, who's an ag economist, will take a look at what's been passed out and then start a comparison on the Farm Doc website, and farmers will be able to take a look at it themselves and put those numbers in, as long as there's enough in the Roberts Amendment so that he can start putting the calculations in, and people can visit the Farm Doc website. We'll put it in our weekend newsletter. Anything else out of Washington that you'd like to update us on before I let you go for the
afternoon? The Word of Bill, I think, is worth a mention.
Yes,
this
absolutely.
Water Resources Development Act bill has been in the works for almost 7 years, and Congress has been unable to pass it. Well, we finally got it together. We passed a bill with overwhelming margins in the House and Senate. In fact, 98 senators voted for it. It's a bill that invests money in locks and dams, basic infrastructure on our waterways, and it also has a lot of flood and levee protection included in it. It's $23 billion over 5 years. The president received the bill today and promised he'd veto it immediately. I think that's a terrible decision. It took us so long to put this together. It's long overdue. This investment's needed in a lot of infrastructure that is aging and in need of repair. The president, I don't understand the thinking that he could ask us just a few days ago for $196 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, not paid for, and then turn around and say that it's irresponsible for us to invest $23 billion over the next 5 years in infrastructure important to the Midwest economy. After the president's veto comes back to Capitol Hill, the House will consider it first, then the Senate, if the House successfully overrides. And I hope to join with a lot of my colleagues in a bipartisan basis to take a different position than the president.
I suppose you would be asking those farmers that would be on the Illinois and upper Mississippi to give a call to their congressman.
Please do. I mean, they have been a great lobbying force. I mean, it's been a source of real frustration waiting 6 years for this to happen. Now we finally got it together, and the president has said no. I think we can override his veto, and I hope we can do it with strong bipartisan support back home.
Senator, thanks much for calling this afternoon. We appreciate it a lot.
Sure. Good talking to you.
Senator Richard Durbin, the senior senator from the state of Illinois, joining us from Washington, D.C., with an update on what's been happening there in terms of legislation. Of course, Word of the Water Resources Development Act, an important piece of legislation for those farmers along the upper Mississippi and the Illinois River. And Farm Bill has been moving fairly rapidly through the Senate. Takes a week off. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to update the Farm Doc website. Gary Schnitke, hopefully, will do that in the next week, and you can visit that site and see how it would play out on your farm. And I know Dan Zwicker's been listening and waiting patiently on our line to continue our conversation about the commodity markets. Thanks, Dan, for holding on. We appreciate that.
You're welcome.
All right, so let's pick up where we left off, and I think we were with wheat. Let's move into the corn, which had an awfully good day today.
Yeah, both corn and soybeans, you know, you could say that corn was probably was under a little pressure here for a couple days here early this week. It was almost to the scary point that maybe this corn market might have a little deeper type correction than what one would actually thought after last week's more positive type price action. But the way the market was able to regroup here after a 2 to 3 day type correction and then close this strong, I think it puts the corn market now in good position here to show some strength as we go on into the end of the month and the first part of November.
And how about the soybeans?
Soybeans, same way. Soybeans pushed the letter of the envelope, so to speak. They went right up against the uptrend line, which looked like they were vulnerable to busting that uptrend line going sideways, and again regrouped and now closed at the upper end of their congestion area here that's kind of been traced out over the last 2 to 3 weeks. So if we would get some follow-through strength here in soybeans here tomorrow, you would begin to hear a lot of technicians start talking about a $10 something front-end bid fairly quickly. Chart-wise, I guess I could maybe read the chart up to 1035, at least initially. But we need some pretty good some follow-through strength here to overnight and in the morning, and I think the bean market would be set up then to, or the soybean market would be set up to try to go up and visit this new highs for the move here.
And what did you make of the $90 a barrel crude today?
Well, the market's got their support from that. The dollar, you know, here had a big reversal here a couple days ago. It has been unable to validate that reversal. Yesterday was kind of a calm day. Today we're back down. So I think that is what renewed the acceleration of inflationary-type commodities, the crude oils, the golds. That came over and helped corn, soybeans. It even helped wheat lift wheat off its lows. So I think that was pretty much generated here by the dollar unable to show any kind of follow-through strength from its reversal that it posted here a couple days ago.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us, and thanks for your patience while the senator was on the line with us.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. Murray Wise of the Westchester Group is with us this afternoon, too. A busy day here on the Closing Market Report. Murray, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Nice to be with you, Todd.
All week long here on the program, we've been talking a little bit about cash rents. We've been talking about the value of land, how it's changed, some capitalized values, and we thought maybe it might be wise to call somebody who deals with this on a regular basis and every day and discuss some of those issues very quickly. And so Westchester Group manages a number of farms across the nation, if I remember correctly. I don't remember how many acres you have, but a lot of acres.
Right.
So tell me how things have changed in the last 2 years from Westchester's point of view, and maybe you should tell the rest, some of the audience, exactly what Westchester does. There will be a few that don't know the group.
Westchester Todd sells and manages farmland across the nation, primarily in the Midwest, and we have a fairly significant dominance in California, Washington, Oregon, to a smaller degree, Florida in the Mid-South, but primarily in the Midwestern states, and we manage somewhere in the area of approximately 100,000 acres. In the last 2 years, to go back to your good question, Todd, obviously we've seen a significant change in farmland values, but let's go back for a second to the driver associated with those. It's only, you know, 13, 14 months ago, Todd, that we had, you know, corn prices in the low $2 range and soybeans well under $6 a bushel. And the income component of operating a Midwest farm today is obviously dramatically changed. And as a result of that, we've seen prices move higher from both a land value perspective as well as from a cash rent perspective. But the same token, my air of caution today would be, at the same time, we're seeing a fairly significant change in the expense side of operating Midwestern grain farm today, primarily from a seed perspective, but also from a fertilizer perspective. We've seen dramatic changes on the cost side, which has put a little bit of a damper on what, in fact, is evolving here. But same token, this has resulted in a fairly substantial increase in going into 08 relevant to cash rent values, which you and I touched on the other day. And by the same token, I throw the caution flag, if you will, relevant to keeping a very close eye on the expense side, because these expenses as we go into the new year are going to be a new and different game plan, if you will. But again, we've seen a nice change on the asset side, at least if you're an owner or a seller, but you've seen a nice change. If you're a buyer, probably not so nice, but it's a major change, Todd, to say the least.
Tell me, and I don't know whether you've had discussions, I'll bet you have, with colleagues and farmers, others who appraise farmland, about the size of a farm, not a parcel, but a total farm. And I had a discussion this morning where we were thinking about the change in cash rent, the increase in the input cost, and what the margin, the profit margin per bushel might be or per acre might be, most definitely per acre, and how big a farm would have to be in order to compete potentially in 5 or 10 years Have you thought about that very much, and do you have some numbers in mind where producers might aim to grow their, if they need to grow their farms?
Great question, Todd. Probably a bad answer from my point of view, but, you know, it's not that many years ago where you know, 300-400 acres was a very, very good-sized Midwestern farm. And I'm afraid that's evolving and probably has evolved beyond me, quite frankly, on the basis that, today it's you know, very, very commonplace for an operating farm operation to be farming, you know, 1,200 to 2,000 acres. And there's a lot of farms today that have evolved in the last 5 years from 2,000 acres to 5,000 to 7,000 acres at the same time. And yet there's a significant number of Midwestern farm operations today, as frightening as it sounds, Todd, that are in fact farming over 10,000 acres. So the size thing is a moving target. The size thing is something that continues to evolve. And I guess I look at the efficient farm operations that I'm most closely associated with are typically at least two generations, some cases three generations, and it's a very efficient unit, and it falls in that, you know, 800 to 2,000 acre category. Again, operating very efficiently with a nice but effective line of machinery. But that acreage thing has been changing since the early 1900s, Todd, and will continue to change, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon your perspective, on a go-forward basis. On you know, a cost side, or rather an income side, you know, historically, you know, cap rates of 3.5 to 4% of land values have been pretty typical. Maybe a range of 3 to 4.5% is most typical. And again, this has been some of the driver in the last 12 months relevant to the change in land values.
And what are the things that might be changing at this point? You probably had a look at Gary Schnitke's farm value, capital value assets, capitalized value document that he posted maybe a couple, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Did you view that as scary in any form as a comparison to the early 1980s?
Oh, I'm not sure that scary is the right word. It certainly brings forth an element of pause and an element of caution, if you will. But again, the real efficient operator that I see out here today is again typically a family operation where they own somewhere between 20 to 35 percent, let's say, of their acres, and they're leasing the rest, and they're amortizing again an effective line of machinery over that combination of owned land and leased land. So I think, generally speaking, the bulk of the operations that I'm most familiar with out here are pretty profitable today, is the bottom line. And yet, again, I caution every one of us, I've already redundantly done twice, I think the expense side is something we need to keep a real close eye on a go-forward basis.
Murray Wise of the Westchester Group, we appreciate you being with us.
Nice to be with you, Todd. Thanks.
Thank you much. That's Murray Wise with Westchester Group here in Champaign, Illinois. On the line with us from Lexington now is Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing. And good afternoon to you, Bill. Tell me about the cash grain situation.
Good afternoon, Todd. A lot of good information this afternoon.
moving fast.
Cash grain continues to improve. The basis on beans, especially, mostly double-digit improvements this past week. Corn is improving. We're in the classic situation where the grain has been put away, and now we need to get to the levels that are going to pull some back out. And if the board continues to do like it did today, the question will be, will the basis have to do as much work as we thought maybe it would? The futures may do more than we think.
Yeah. So, what's your drether? You think that the basis, the board will not go up, and the basis will have to close the gap, or will it just up higher with the board?
I think on the corn side of things, we'll continue to see the basis improve. I see corn is continuing to be fairly choppy here. Soybeans look like they could go some more on the cash side, and I don't know that we may see the basis stay fairly wide. We are getting towards delivery here. We'll see what happens, but we may see the future to do most of the work again.
All right, and what are your bids for the day?
January corn is $3.49, beans $9.77.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks.
Thanks much. That's Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon, a busy market report this afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, about the weather forecast. Regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Former Governor James Thompson says he hopes to take former Governor George Ryan's case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Today, the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals turned down Ryan's request for a rehearing by all actively sitting judges on the court. That 3-judge panel already had turned down Ryan's appeal, and he's been out on bond since he was convicted of racketeering and fraud more than a year ago. Thompson says getting a fair jury trial is the most fundamental right under the Constitution, and he says he plans to argue that Ryan didn't get it. Thompson also says he'll ask that Ryan remain free on bond while they wait to hear if the Supreme Court will take his case. Some local government officials in Indiana say Governor Mitch Daniels' proposal to cap homeowners' property tax assessment could force counties to raise income taxes. Indiana counties are allowed to raise local income taxes up to an additional 1% if the money is used to replace property tax revenue. A strike has become a bigger possibility for food and building service workers on the University of Illinois' Urbana campus. Their union submitted a 10-day intent to strike notice today. That lets them call a walkout in as early as 10 days if there's no progress in contract talks. The head of the Service Employees International Union Local says any strike could last no longer than 3 days, but informational pickets could last longer. Students who want to transfer from community colleges to the U of I will get some more assistance under a grant program. The university plans to work with about 10 community colleges around the state to encourage more students to pursue a 4-year degree, helping direct them through the process of getting financial aid and transferring course credits. There will be no restrictions on how U of I homecoming parade participants can use the Chief Illiniwek symbol. So says university administrators, only days after they said images of the symbol would not be allowed on floats, decorations, or participants themselves. Chancellor Richard Herman issued a statement this morning saying those who put the ban in effect overinterpreted the U of I's directive last winter to retire the chief as an official symbol. Spokeswoman Robin Kaler says it came down to an issue of personal expression. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. Pete Levitt now joins us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest, the region, the nation, and the globe. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Where do you want to start today?
Well, let's start locally today. We've got the weekend coming up, and we've got some showers that'll work their way northward through the state. A few this afternoon in central Illinois, but they'll probably fade. And then tomorrow we see some showers working northward through Illinois and generating maybe a quarter to half inch amounts. So tomorrow's the gray day for the week because after that the system moves off to the east. We see a big cold high pressure system descending through the upper Midwest, bringing clearing weather and colder temperatures to the region. On Saturday night, we probably could see some frost around in parts of central Illinois as temperatures dip below freezing. Sun, cloudy and cold, and then clearing weather late Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Next week look fine with temperatures near normal. The cold shot on Saturday night will be short-lived, and we don't see much there. So that's the weather out for most of the central part of the Midwest.
All right, and a very quick 10 seconds on maybe South America.
South America, well, we've finally seen some rain get up into the Mato Grosso in the west and continuing over part of the central portions of southeastern Brazil. That's good. It still has to get up, though, into Minas and Sao Paulo in the northern part of the belt, so they still need some moisture up there, but things look a little bit better.
All right, we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon. We're not done yet. Dave Dickey is here now. He has a complete look at what's been happening in Washington, D.C. over the past 24 hours, with the exception of this morning.
A number of GOP senators yesterday challenged a new revenue assurance commodity program, saying it will potentially reduce the number of producers who opt to buy crop insurance. producers choosing the optional average crop revenue program would give up current direct payments, countercyclical payments, and marketing loans for a $15 per acre fixed payment and the potential to receive more subsidy support pegged to the average per farm revenue within the state they live. Kansas Senator Pat Roberts led the charge to modify the plan, bringing markup of the farm bill to a virtual halt yesterday. Roberts introduced an amendment that would prevent producers opting for the ACRP to switch back to traditional programs. Roberts also says the amendment would put a $60,000 cap on ACRP payments.
In the nine hardest years for Kansas wheat producers, the program would have paid out only twice. 7 out of those 9 years, we would have been in the same boat under this ACR program. That got my attention.
North Dakota Senator Kent Conrad has serious concerns about potential unintended consequences of ACRP, saying while it may be helpful to corn and soybean growers, wheat producers, who often have less consistent growing seasons, may mistakenly fail to buy crop insurance because of ACRP. But Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkins says the argument may be without merit. In Harkins' words, the assumption that some of these farmers are going to drop out of crop insurance is just an assumption. But it's an assumption the Senate Agriculture Committee wants monitored. It approved an amendment calling on USDA to hire outside actuaries to determine the effects of the ACRP on crop insurance and whether that would lead to any reduction in the level of sound policies in the crop insurance program. Meanwhile, Indiana Senator Richard Lugar announced that he will bring a farm bill reform measure straight to the Senate floor, bypassing the Agriculture Committee. Lugar's Farm Ranch Equity Stewardship and Health Act would phase out the $5.2 billion in annual direct payments by 2014. The proposal also has elements of a county-based crop insurance plan that would give every farmer insurance to cover 85% of either expected crop revenue or yield. Lugar, a member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, decided to take his argument to the Senate floor because, in the Ag Committee, in his words, it would not do well. Also headed to the floor, an amendment from Iowa Senator Charles Grassley to lower annual subsidy payments to $250,000 for married couples and $125,000 for individuals.
There was a payment limitation commission set up in the conference committee report of the last farm bill that was supposed to satisfy all of us. Read that report. They came up with the same recommendations we had in the last farm bill. And then we've also got all the statements of all the senators that the last time we tried to do this on the budget resolution, that wasn't the place to do it in the middle of a farm bill, that we needed to do it when the next farm bill come up. Don't be surprised if we're there taking you at your word that you're going to work with us to get this job done and not try to do any shenanigans.
What work the Agriculture Committee accomplished on the Farm Bill yesterday angered the National Pork Producers Council. Senators passed an amendment that included a ban on packer ownership. Former MPPC President Joy Philippi says if the ban becomes law, it will wreck the marketplace.
We have packers that own hogs, and we still have had profits. We haven't had any bad months for 36 months. So if they're owning hogs and the marketplace is still responding, it's not an issue. And we feel that it actually, for our business right now with the amount of hogs, if they were to put a ban on packer ownership, our market prices would just tumble tremendously.
Other amendments passing yesterday included one requiring mandatory dairy price reporting and another that would create critical access offices within the Farm Service Agency. Those offices would be defined as county FSA offices targeted for closure this year. Those offices would remain open for the life of the Farm Bill unless they are within 20 miles of another FSA office or have zero full-time equivalent employees. County offices in limited and high-poverty areas would be exempt from the mileage requirement. This is Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report, a very busy Closing Market Report. We talked to Senator Durbin and Murray Wise this afternoon, Dan Zwicker, of course, and Bill Mayer. We hope you tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the ag markets. I'll be at the FFA convention, hopefully coming to you from there tomorrow afternoon for the Closing Market Report. And then on Monday, Dave will fill in for me as I'll make a trip to Chicago to the USDA NASS Data Users Group. And we'll talk to them a little bit about the numbers that come out from USDA on a regular basis and see if we can't finagle a way to get those more currently up-to-date on our website for you. That's all for the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.